212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. And, you know, do what you can, and we greatly appreciate your efforts, and tell a friend or two about this organization that has been around for almost 63 years. Yep. January will mark 63 years of WBAI being part of the Pacifica Radio Network. All right, it's 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Revolutions Per Minute coming up.
Is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 FM in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 7 p.m. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Each week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in New York City. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Hey, New York City, you're listening to Revolutions Per Minute, live from the new WBAI studios, a socialist radio show and podcast for members of New York City Democratic Socialist of America. The Democratic Socialist of America is the largest socialist organization in the United States, with 95,000 members nationwide, and New York City DSA is its biggest chapter. We are run by our 9,000-plus members and organizers who are working together to build democratic socialism in all five boroughs. I'm Lee Zishi, and I use she, her pronouns. While a red wave of victories did not materialize for Republicans earlier this month on Election Day in most parts of the country, conservatives won big here in New York, gaining congressional seats as well as seats in the New York State Assembly and Senate. Republican Lee Zeldin centered his gubernatorial campaign around a false and racist narrative on crime that dominated media coverage, and it was almost enough to defeat Governor Kathy Hochul, who ran a lackluster campaign despite a large fundraising haul. The New York Times reported earlier this week that the Republican ad blitz focused on crime motivated voters to head to the polls in suburban Long Island in the lower Hudson Valley, despite many of those voters living in some of the safest places in the country where crime rates have flattened, and that many of them had exaggerated views about crime rates in New York City, which are still well below where they were for decades. Today, we're joined live by Nomi and DJ to break down some of the misinformation that blanketed the airwaves before the election. Nomi is the constituent services and organizing manager for Councilmember Tiffany Caban and worked with DJ and other volunteers from the district to create a public safety resources poster along with Assemblymember Zoran Mondani's office. We'll talk to Nomi and DJ about how socialists are not only battling right-wing propaganda stoking fear on crime, but organizing for real public safety in our communities and dignity for all. We'll also talk to Michelangelo with Mid-Hudson Valley DSA about what neoliberal Democrats are getting wrong in their post-election analysis and how centering socialist messaging led Sarah Hanastrusa to victory in her assembly race in the Hudson Valley. We'll also be opening up the phone lines around 7:45. We know public safety is an important topic that has not gotten the nuanced conversation it deserves, and we want to hear from you about it. The number to call in later in the show will be 212-209-2877. And first, the headlines with Amy Wilson.
Hey, what's up, New York City? This is Amy Wilson with your headlines for today, Tuesday, November 29th. In local news, the Adams administration hired a career 911 dispatcher into a senior-level role at NYPD that immediately quintupled her salary. The official happens to be a personal friend of Adams, who rented him an apartment for 4 years. The New York Judicial Commission has released a slate of 7 candidates to replace Janet DeFiore, the outgoing chief judge on the state's Court of Appeals. After developers doubled the number of low- and middle-income apartments in their plan, Councilmember Julie Wan of District 26 in Western Queens announced her support for the Innovation Queens project, which will build 12 new buildings and 3,200 new units in a mostly industrial part of Astoria. An internal audit of the NYC Administration for Children's Services revealed a pattern of racial bias against Black and Brown families that the agency is tasked to serve. Despite Mayor Adams' campaign promise to cut overtime hours for police officers, his over-policing strategy as solutions to subway safety, homelessness, and drug enforcement has led to a 67% increase in overtime hours as compared to last year. Julio Medina has resigned from the Board of Corrections, which oversees the city jails, just 1 year into his 6-year term. Medina is also the CEO of Exodus Transitional Community, a nonprofit now facing multiple investigations from the city. Parents with the money are making sure their kids are given the special education services public schools are legally required to provide. Governor Hochul signed into law a moratorium on cryptocurrency mining, a process that has been seen as disastrous for the environment. In elections news, despite significant losses in the U.S. Congress, New York State Democrats will retain supermajorities in both the Assembly and State Senate. Democrats may act to prevent the inauguration of Lester Chang, a Republican who defeated Assemblymember Peter Abadi of District 49 in Bensonhurst in the general election, after reports surfaced that he may not meet residency requirements to qualify for his seat. Those are the headlines. Now back to the studio for another edition of Revolutions Per Minute.
Our headlines are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by New York City DSA Electoral Working Group covering local politics and radical activism. You can subscribe at thethornnyc.substack.com. Republicans tried to scare their way into office here in New York this election cycle, and for some politicians in the Hudson Valley, it worked. Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Milano defeated Democrat Josh Riley for the New York 19th Congressional District, which stretches from the southern tier to the Hudson Valley, and in the New York 17th Congressional District, after forcing out Mondaire Jones, chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign, Sean Patrick Maloney, lost his race to first-term Assemblymember Mike Lawler. Democrat Pat Ryan barely won his race in the 18th Congressional District and may owe his narrow victory to turnout driven by voters excited to cast their ballot for a Democratic Socialist. I talked to Michelangelo with Mid-Hudson Valley DSA about how Sarah Hanna Stressless campaign for assembly in the Hudson Valley may have prevented Democrats from losing another seat in the House and how they never shied away from a strong socialist message. Let's hear what he had to say. Hey, Michelangelo, welcome back to Revolutions Per Minute.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me again.
Yeah, so for our regular listeners, you heard Michelangelo a couple months ago. He's from the Mid-Hudson Valley DSA. We talked about Sarah Hanna's really amazing campaign to win the primary. Sarah Hanna won the general election to become an assembly member in the Mid-Hudson Valley earlier this month. And, you know, we heard a lot from some of the, you know, lead Democrats, including Jay Jacobs, who's the head of the New York State Democratic Party, as well as Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, who lost his race, kind of blame like progressives and some of the socialists for some of the losses we've seen in the state. When you were on RPM earlier this year, you really talked about how Sarah Hanna's campaign focused a socialist message. Can you talk a little? Can you kind of respond to, you know, what the center Democrats' reaction was for this election?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think when you look at the Democrats who did not win in New York this year, there's actually a real common trend in the kind of messaging they brought to constituents and to the people that they wanted to wanted to vote for them. And that was one of stoking fears about rising crime, of kind of responding to this conversation about a crisis of democracy and how we need to kind of, you know, rebuild faith in institutions. But disconnected, I think, from a lot of those campaigns was a message on class solidarity and just basic economic issues that so many people in New York State are experiencing and struggling with. And, you know, I think not only did we have an inherently socialist message about, you know, expanding universal programs, institutionalizing solidarity in New York through things like public power and universal health care, passing legislation like the Build Public Renewables Act, like the New York Health Act. You know, we really did speak to very common needs that were coming up in every conversation at the door. And I think, you know, we can speak to that. We had one of the strongest ground games in New York State this year. We heard from folks in the Democratic Party that we were likely responsible for Pat Ryan's very close win here, just by nature of the amount of excitement we created in the district running on these issues. And I think, you know, one other element that was, you know, I think somewhat unique to our race, above outside of New York City especially, was we really centered climate as an issue. And, you know, we saw from Prop 1 getting more votes than Kathy Hochul that climate was a major motivating issue for a lot of voters in New York. And we not only spoke to the urgent need to respond to the climate crisis by passing legislation like BPRA, the Build Public Renewables Act, which would save people money on their utility bills, 50% for low and moderate income New Yorkers, but also accelerate our transition to renewable energy. You know, not only did we speak about those legislative issues that directly address our lack of renewable energy, but we also connected it all back to this economic conversation, right? Of people paying, in some cases, 500% more for their utilities than they may have a year ago. You know, we can speak to the fact that the climate crisis is not just one of, you know, a crisis facing the planet and our climate, but is also equally an issue that stands to improve people's just general well-being and the affordability of basic services and access to basic services. And so we did not water down our messaging. This is something that I've hammered on a lot since our win, both in the primary back in June and also now in November, is that, you know, we went to voters and we spoke to them directly about a social and political theory of change for not only how we build power in New York, but importantly, how this race and the work we are doing after this race is part of building a political movement for the working class to actually win real change in New York State that will improve people's material conditions. And, you know, I think when you talk to voters earnestly about how big these crises are, how complicated these problems are, and then you tell them that, you know, it's not enough to just elect a good politician. Like, Sarah Hahn is going to be an amazing advocate and fighter on these issues and organize inside and outside of Albany, but so are we. And that's, like, really what we went to voters with, was this pitch that, like, you know, when we are done here, after you've given us your vote, like, we also want you involved in this bigger fight to actually advocate for and build a movement that is capable of winning these things. And I think voters really gravitated to that. And I know that was unique to our race, especially, you know, outside of the city. This year, especially, you know, New York City DSA ran a ton of amazing socialists this year. But up outside of New York City, this was unique to a lot of the conversations I think voters were having. And I think this is also the first time in the Hudson Valley that a lot of people were exposed to these types of ideas and conversations at the door from a political campaign.
Yeah, and it was kind of interesting, too, to see how the way that, you know, center Democrats attacked progressives during the primaries and even beforehand, you know, really came to kind of like bite them in the butt later. You know, they really focused on the, you know, the false narrative around rising crime, attacked people who believed in defunding the police. And then that same messaging was used against them by Republicans, and it didn't work out well.
Yeah. And I think, like, up here, The crime question came up, but, you know, I think I actually responded to a Pat Ryan tweet not too long ago where he was, like, talking about, you know, how, oh, yeah, like, we have to address crime and I support, you know, hiring more police. And the irony is, you know, we had 16,000 conversations up here this year, and crime did not come up that much for us. And voters were actually really surprised when you told them that, well, you know, what you're hearing about rising crime and this crime wave is actually a lie being propagated by the Republicans. This is another Republican lie. And, you know, I think voters were like both excited to hear that in a sense, because it meant like, okay, you know what, you don't need to worry about this narrative that is being put around that you're picking up on. Like, instead, let's actually talk about if we are even serious about crime, like, how do we reduce crime? We address the core issues and these systems that lead to, you know, worse outcomes for people. Let's improve our public education system. Let's get people access to affordable and high quality housing so people are not unhoused or housing insecure. Like, let's actually address these systems that will lead to better outcomes for everyone. And voters really gravitated to that message. And I think it was, I think it's a huge mistake, obviously, for Democrats to parrot these, you know, the lies of rising crime. But it's also like diminishing the ability for us to actually have a vision of a better future and excite people about something that is hopeful and something that is beautiful to aspire to. And I think that that was also something that really set us apart this year up here, is that we really, it wasn't just the complexity of the messaging. It was also that we had a real political vision, and we wanted people to feel hopeful about the future. And I think we, in New York especially right now, we've encountered a lot of, a lot of cynicism about where we're headed. And I think that the dynamics of Republicans overperforming this year in New York especially kind of speaks to that, that there's been a failure of the Democratic Party and of the left outside of like our circles to really acknowledge that things are not improving for a lot of people. And we have to be able to give people something to like believe in if we want their support. And, you know, I think that is really how we address apathy in the electorate, is we start to actually campaign on and organize around, you know, ideas that are like actually hopeful and not get stuck in these like conversations around things that really diminish like the amazing things that we are already doing in the state.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, Build Public Renewables, which was very, very close to passing last year, past the Senate, was really only held up by Speaker Carl Hastie last year. So are you hopeful? Like, what's the terrain looking like in Albany for this year? What do you think socialists will be able to get done with this new Senate and Assembly?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, like you said, the Assembly is definitely the barrier, and we now have a new socialist representative in the Assembly. And you know, I think it is not insignificant that this is also the first socialist elected outside of New York City. We know that leadership is responsive and really cares about the statewide kind of makeup of the Assembly and the Senate, that they really care to hear from upstate representatives. And I think one of our strengths is that, you know, again, we're not, this is not just Sarah Hanna going to Albany. Like, we're going to continue to organize in this district and mobilize the voters of the 103rd and organize them around these issues. And I think that the dynamic that we are certainly looking to change here going into this year is to continue the work we've been doing of talking to people about these things and then bring them even deeper into this project, so that we have a real like grassroots movement in the Hudson Valley saying they want public power, saying they want the Build Public Renewables Act passed. And I think that will help to kind of steer leadership on some of these issues where they have been less ready to kind of move with us. And, you know, I think outside of that, I think we learned a lot this year about how to effectively organize in the legislature. And I can expect that having another socialist in office in there whipping votes and talking to their colleagues and building relationships intentionally around these priorities, like, I think that will also continue to build on itself and pay off, hopefully, this year. I'm very hopeful. I feel like we have a lot of leverage. And then I think the one other dynamic is that we saw a lot of losses in the Assembly and the Senate in terms of the seats that the Democrats hold here, which means that our supermajority is smaller. I think we may have lost the supermajority in the Senate, or it's down to like one seat. And so that all means that like progressives now in the legislature have more leverage over negotiations. They have a larger minority that can kind of put pressure on leadership to help steer some of these conversations. And so I think that a lot of the work going into next year for our socialists in office is going to really be about how we continue to build a coalition in the legislature that can like effectively use their power to leverage leadership in our favor and try to get some of these pieces of legislation through. And so I think that is like, for me at least, how I see like our organizing project going into next year. And that's DSA's role in the district. That's Sarah Hanna's office. That's our other socialists in office working together. And so that's all, you know, very exciting. And I think the political terrain in New York is ripe for change and very advantageous for the socialist left right now.
Yeah, very well said, and important to add, all the socialists won re-election in addition to Sarah Hanna. We will also have a new senator, Kristen Gonzalez. Anything else you'd like to add today?
I mean, I've been really trying to make sure that all the people that we've organized with in our campaign who maybe aren't DSA members yet join. And so to listeners, too, this is a really important moment to join an organization like the Democratic Socialists of America, where you have a lot of agency and ability to organize and build something. And we need you, right? Like, we need people to be involved in a member-led, dues-paying organization where we can democratically build a socialist vision of the future together. And I think, you know, the type of organized work we do is really what is going to make or break our ability to get these things done. And I really can't encourage listeners enough to join DSA and get involved in building the movement with us.
You heard it here. Thanks so much, Michelangelo, for joining us again. And to our listeners, you should check out our Simplecast episode from the past to hear more about the really amazing ground game that Sarah Hanna's team had this summer. So thanks so much for being on again.
Thanks.
That was Michelangelo with the Mid-Hudson Valley DSA talking about their campaign to win an election for Sarah Hanna in the Hudson Valley. And I will just second again, check out that episode we did with Michelangelo in July. It's just really impressive how many doors they knocked in some really rural areas. If you're like to nerd out on elections and ground game information, that is definitely the episode for you. So you're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. Today, we're talking about a socialist vision for public safety. We'll be opening up our phone line soon, and we know this can be a topic where people have a lot of strong opinions, but also a lot of questions that are probably still unanswered, and we definitely want to hear from you, our listeners. So take down this number so you're ready to call in later. It is 212-209-287. Again, that is 212-209-287. And we're joined by Jay, worked on the poster that was distributed by Councilmember Tiffany Caban and Assemblymember Zoran Mamdani's office. Nomi and DJ, we would love our listeners to get to know you a little bit. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and, you know, why you identify as a socialist and some of the work you do within DSA? And Nomi, we'll start off with you.
Sure. Thanks, Lee. Thanks for having us on tonight. My name is Nomi. I use she, her pronouns, and I primarily do organizing for Councilmember Caban's office, and I'm also a DSA member. I've always been, you know, pretty left politically, but really started to identify as a socialist in 2020 during COVID, when it became really clear to me that our current system will never really be able to support people's basic needs, and we really need socialism. So my primary, you know, organizing work right now is within Tiffany's office doing this really incredible public safety work.
What about you, DJ?
Yeah, hi, I'm DJ. I use they, them pronouns, and I live in Astoria. I have worked in suicide prevention and Asian American older adults advocacy, but right now I'm currently working towards a master's in social work as a student hunter. I'm a socialist because I believe we can and we absolutely need to create a world where every single person's needs are met, and we can do that by redistributing resources. And I truly, genuinely believe that my life is intertwined with the lives of my neighbors and my community, as is everyone's. And so that's why I'm organizing with the Alternatives Policing Group in Astoria with Nomi and with a bunch of other folks, which we'll talk about today.
Yeah, we can't wait to dig in a lot more, and we're so excited to have you on. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI. Earlier, you heard from Michelangelo with the Mid-Hudson Valley DSA about their victorious campaign to elect Sarah Hanna to the State Assembly, which centered on socialist messaging. And soon we'll hear more from Nomi and DJ about a socialist vision for public safety and countering right-wing propaganda on crime. But first, I'm sure as you've heard a lot today, it is Giving Tuesday, and we are a listener-sponsored radio station that depends on your generosity to stay on the air. You know, WBAI programming, like RPM, is hopefully a palate cleanser for you all when you're just surrounded in a sea of ads for things like Black Friday and Cyber Monday and that capitalist push just to keep you spending and spending till Christmas. You know, it can really wear you down and really destroy any kind of sense of holiday spirit and community. But that's not what we're about here on WBAI. And we are only on the air because of listeners like you. So, you know, maybe instead of spending more money or giving it to some gigantic nonprofit that already has a bloated budget, think about giving to WBAI today. You can call the station at 212-209-2950. Again, that number is 212-209-2950. Or you can go to WBAI.org. Earlier in the intro to this show, I mentioned that there was a New York Times article that was covering how, you know, that blitz by the ad blitz by Republicans really motivated a lot of suburban voters and pushed this narrative around crime. But what was missing from that New York Times article was that, you know, they ran a lot of articles pushing a false crime narrative. Of course, we know that the New York Post, you know, this is their bread and butter. And we'll talk a little bit later in the show about how the New York Post really, you know, slung a lot of hate and really tried to, you know, rile up their listeners and targeted socialists who are just trying to, you know, create a better world. And of course, yeah, we expect that from the New York Post. These kinds of things are what so many of these media outlets rely on. And we need something to combat that. We need spaces like this where we're actually talking about what is benefiting the public and not just messaging. You know, as we talk about on every show, like you heard from Michelangelo earlier in the show, you know, all the guests that we have on here are really interested in organizing for a better future. We don't want to just get people in office. We want to pass legislation that will meaningfully change, you know, people's lives, especially when people are struggling so much. So if you can, just please give to the station. And we do know times are very, very tough. It is a hard time to be a working class New Yorker, you know, really anywhere in this country. We're seeing high utility bills. Like we also heard in that interview with Michelangelo, we know Con Ed wants to jack up our bills again. And if you were listening to WBAI last week, you heard Assemblymember Zoran Mondani on the Independent show talking about that Con Ed rate hike. So we understand how hard it is for everybody right now. So even if you can only give a small donation, when we all come together, you know, that stuff adds up. You know, one of the taglines of the Bernie Sanders campaign was that the average donation was $27. And you know what? $27 plus $27 plus $27, like it really, really adds up. So if you can only even give just a tiny little bit of money today, just give what you can. And if you're in a little more privileged position, give a little bit more. Know how important this is as a resource for so many working class New Yorkers. We love being on the air with you all. We love talking to you when you call in, and we need your help to stay here. So please give to the station. You can call 212-209-2950. Again, that number is 212-209-2950, or you can go to WBAI.org. Thank you all so much for keeping RPM on the air for almost 3 years. We really, really couldn't do this without you. And now we're really excited to dig in more to our conversation on public safety. Like I said, we'll also be opening up the phone line. So if you have thoughts on this, we definitely want you to call in. And so first, Nomi, can you talk a little bit about the process of creating the public safety resources poster and some of the intent behind that?
Sure. so The public safety resources poster was created by the public safety research team, formed initially out of Assemblymember Mamdani's office in the fall of 2021, so about a year ago. It's around 10 volunteers united really around a vision of making Astoria safer and finding alternatives to police. And the volunteers, the group, decided to start that process by really listening to the community directly. So starting with small business owners, because those are the people that interact with the public on a daily basis. They really have their finger on the pulse of the neighborhood. So the group started doing interviews with small business owners and staff in May of this year, and now have done around 30 to 40 interviews with small businesses, and really started seeing a theme from those interviews, seeing some trends of issues around homelessness, around mental health concerns, substance abuse, and decided to create these posters because we wanted to give some information around how to combat those issues from a non-police-based perspective. So that was really kind of the core of the creation of those posters.
Yeah, DJ, anything you'd like to add about the intent? And I know you maybe you kind of touched on this a little bit in your intro, but like what motivated you, you know, to want to become a part of this?
Sure, yeah. I mean, yeah, I personally want to find alternatives to the police just for myself. But I think the process of talking to small business owners was really interesting because we wanted to hear directly from community members themselves with just like purely the intent to listen and not to kind of tell them about our beliefs even, just because we wanted to know what people thought of the safety of the neighborhood. And so as Nomi mentioned a little bit, we heard themes from them. The small business owners talked to us about petty theft, homelessness, mental health concerns, substance abuse. And they told us about how a lot of the time, if sort of a public safety concern would arise, they would try to de-escalate the situation themselves before contacting the police or anybody else. And that worked a lot of the time. They also told us that in the situations that they did call the police, the result often wasn't what they were looking for. The police didn't resolve the situation, or they took too long and then the situation diffused itself, or sometimes the police didn't even come at all, even though they called. And so that was a particularly interesting piece. So even when small business owners weren't necessarily looking for explicitly alternatives to police, it was clear that what was happening with the police now wasn't working. And so small business owners kind of traced back the safety situations they were concerned about to kind of broader systemic issues, even without our prompting. And so they made the connection that if people had housing and if people had the resources that they needed, then a lot of the public safety concerns that they saw probably wouldn't be happening. And so through the process of these interviews, we learned that community members themselves wanted additional resources to address public safety concerns. And so that was what drove the creation of this resource poster.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you say that, you know, multiple people you talked to said that calling the police often didn't actually solve their problems. That's something we've heard from guests multiple times in a lot of different organizing fields here on RPM. And so you talked to your neighbors and then you created this poster. I guess starting with you, DJ, can you talk about what some of the recommendations were on the poster that you distributed to the community?
Sure. So we framed the resources under sort of these broad questions around if someone is experiencing homelessness or a mental health crisis or a drug-related issue, or if there's a conflict that appears to be escalating. And so just to highlight a couple of the specific resources that we have, we point folks to Breaking Ground, which is an organization which can send a street outreach team to someone experiencing homelessness. And so that organization has direct experience full-time building trust with the person who's experiencing homelessness, assessing their needs, and supporting them throughout the process of getting housing. one of the mental health resources that we list is NYC Well, which is a text and phone hotline throughout the city that can provide real-time emotional support in English, Spanish, Mandarin, and Cantonese. And in some situations can dispatch a mobile crisis team to assist someone. And so overall, there are several more resources on the poster itself, but overall, these suggestions revolve around two main themes. First of all, like resources that make a material difference in a public safety situation. So like knowing how to use Narcan, connecting with people, connecting people with supportive resources that they can actually use and benefit from. And two, building a foundation for a safer community. Things like getting to know your neighbors and practicing upstander intervention, and things that take time to do, but really create the vision of safety that we have.
Yeah, Nomi, anything you'd like to add on the poster that came out of all this hard work and outreach to the community?
Yeah, I think really just hammering home on the fact that these issues came out of real conversations with people from the community, and they are resources that people really expressed a desire for. And so we're really proud to have put this out, and that small business owners are using it, and we're giving it out to them on a regular basis.
Yeah. And unfortunately, though, you know, when you first put out the poster, there was also, you know, a very unfortunate murder in your district. And the New York Post kind of and the right wing seized on that and kind of directed a lot of vitriol towards your offices, to both your office, the council member Tiffany Caban, as well as assembly member Zoran Mandamis. Nomi, can you talk a little bit about what happened when this kind of caught fire and drew all this attention towards you?
Yeah. So, you know, the New York Post published a few articles, and after those came out, our office and the assembly member's office really started to receive hundreds of calls and emails about, you know, all of about the poster and the horrible the horrible death. And that really essentially stopped us from being able to provide constituent services through our office or speak to community members at all. We couldn't sort through the hundreds of calls and emails. And so we couldn't, you know, make sure that we were actually hearing from constituents who needed our help, which was really unfortunate. The vast majority of the calls and emails were coming from outside of the district. And taking the resources poster out of context. You know, the poster was always intended for nonviolent, for slowly escalating situations rather than any extreme situations or any very violent situations. And people were kind of taking that out of context and in bad faith, which was unfortunate.
Yeah, very unfortunate, and unfortunate that a lot of these news stations rely on just that really sensationalist stuff to try to sell papers, and it's very misleading. And so, you know, when one of our comrades might be in that position where the right wing is kind of like bearing down on them, you know, what are some ways for us to show solidarity? What helped you all out in that kind of moment?
Yeah, I mean, in my view, the New York Post and articles like these are really trying to scare us and trying to stop us from doing this incredibly difficult but incredibly important work of talking to community members about issues of public safety and finding solutions to those issues. The Post has a lot of resources and power on their side to do all of this. So, you know, to support each other, we can really continue to do exactly what this project that this volunteer team has been working on aims to do, which is building connections between community members so that we all know that we're here from each other, have somebody to turn to in times where we are getting right-wing attacks. Because they are inevitable, they're going to continue to happen, but we need to be able to keep doing this work. So building these connections, building community is critically important.
And I would also add one thing that I've heard our comrade from this show, Amy Wilson, say is like, don't share the New York Post articles online. Don't give them any like clickbait. If you want, do a quick screenshot. But yeah, stop driving attention towards these folks. And so also, as we mentioned earlier in the show, you know, this narrative around crime that's been very misleading really dominated so much of the election cycle. DJ is somebody who, you know, took time to work on this public safety resource poster. How did it feel to see this narrative, you know, take up so much space this year?
Yeah, I mean, it was awful, but I mean, yeah, especially with what happened in Astoria, Sergeant Allison Russo Elling was killed in this shocking and horrific way, and just a few avenues from where I live. And that alone is scary and really heartbreaking. And so it was awful to see how the New York Post used her death as a tool to discredit, in some ways, our public safety work. And so it's clear in that instance that the police didn't prevent this violent situation either. And so we know that we need a different vision for public safety that actually does make our community safer. And that takes investing in more services that make our community safer now and in the long run. And I think as for the resource poster, I think when we created it, I didn't expect any attention for it at all, let alone kind of like a warm welcome. But I think people who aren't already invested in our vision of public safety really doubt that there are viable alternatives to the police, because these alternatives are currently so underfunded. But if we have more funding for more robust services, it really is a possible world that we could live in. And so with all that said, I'm really proud to have contributed to creating something tangible that people can actually use when they want to use an alternative to the police.
It definitely takes, I think, a lot more work to organize around sometimes hope and a different vision than it does around fear. But, you know, that's the work we've got to do. Naomi, can you talk a little bit, you know, when you did actually present this to the community and people who haven't been tainted by this horrible right-wing messaging, you know, how have people responded to the poster and this vision that your office and DSA kind of as a whole is trying to present around public safety?
Yeah, we've had a really positive reception from these small business owners that we're having conversations with, as well as other constituents. You know, as we said earlier, we've talked to 30 to 40 small businesses at this point, and most of them have really expressed this desire to learn more about non-police-based solutions to the problems that they're seeing every single day, and even fight for additional investments into those resources that really need to be expanded. And so that's been really exciting to see that we can find common ground and that people have had a really positive reception to this vision.
Anything you'd like to add about to that, DJ, about how the community has responded?
I think Nomi knows better than I do, I think, but I think the small business interviews themselves kind of speak to how people really are looking for ways for the community to become safer, and what we have right now doesn't work. And so I think that in itself is hopeful for us as people who want to find alternatives to the police, that's something that people already want.
Yeah, and we would love to hear what our listening community has to say about all this. We have a little bit more than 10 minutes left, and so we would love for you to call in. The number to do that is 212-209-2877. And just very respectfully, remember, you know, we are here in a place to try to talk about solutions and work this out. So we know this can be an issue people are very passionate about, but please come into every conversation with good faith. We're having some folks call in, but real quick before we go to calls, we definitely heard the Democrats kind of take on some of this messaging around that same messaging that we saw the right wing really cling on to. And it really kind of came back to bite them in the butt. As I said earlier with Michelangelo, you know, they saying we defunded the police and it's this huge problem. And then that same messaging really hurt them. Nomi, can you talk a little bit about how as socialists we can take back that narrative?
Yeah, I do want to acknowledge that, you know, people feel unsafe. That's real. That's something that is very prominent right now. But the question that we really should be focusing on is how we address that feeling. So often people are talking about safety or quote unquote crime, but it's actually about substance abuse or homelessness or mental health concerns, which are problems that the police haven't yet solved and aren't going to solve. And so the focus really needs to be on investment into specialized programs that will actually solve those problems. And that's things like non-police crisis responders, like the Be Heard program that's currently a pilot in some parts of the city, like street outreach teams for people experiencing homelessness, like overdose prevention centers or safe injection sites. So we really need to move forward by like thinking and talking about how we create a safer, healthier, more caring world. And it's really through those investments.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand that if these investments are going to the police, that often means there are investments that aren't being made in other areas that can really help. It looks like we have some callers on the line. To our first caller, you are now live on WBAI. What is your question or comment?
Yeah. Hello?
Hey, yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, I was calling because, I had an experience in court, thank God. And the thing being is, we talk about socialism, but the thing being is, nobody, 85% of this country doesn't know what government we have. I mean, we keep calling it a democracy. And like, for instance, nobody knows what Article 4, Section 4 is. And what Article 4, Section 4 is a guarantee to a Republican form of government. And the thing being is, you have to know this is we are living by the Constitution. That's why the Constitution lived for that long. But I mean, if socialism is the answer, you know, the people that signed the Constitution would have said so. One of the things is a case called Dunn versus Bidwell, okay? And it said, and one of the Chief Justice Marshall says, if it'd be a sad day when we look to legislation, okay, to enlarge itself into our Constitution. That's a problem when you have that. But you can't do anything. You can't say anything. You can't do anything against the cops if you don't know your rights. If you don't know your rights, you don't know anything, how to maneuver, and you don't know how to do these things, how are you going to implement another system that they ain't going to know either at that time? It's just going to be the same thing. You have to educate people and how the country is run. It's run by a constitution,
yeah,
no matter.
We can let Nomi respond to that as somebody who's in a government office. And we definitely, too, you know, if people have thoughts on some of the topic today, we definitely want to hear that. Nomi, any response to the caller as somebody who runs an office?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that, education around our government and our systems is incredibly important. A lot of people, it's true, a lot of people don't know how our government works and its limitations. So that's definitely a focus area that is very much needed. And I think, like, to me, socialism is really about caring for others, investing in our communities and building community, building connections between between people. And that's, you know, what we're doing with this project. And we're hearing from community members that they they're really receptive to that. So it's definitely possible.
Very well said. Not always easy to have conversations in community, but always very well worth it when it happens. We've got our next caller up. Caller, you are now live on WBAI. What is your question or comment?
Hi. Yeah, my name is David and Elizabeth. First of all, it's a great show. I just want to say that I'm a retired teacher who's been trying to work for substitutes, what I'm doing now for our rights. But I want to tell you about the Post. They're a bunch of bullies. And the old saying is, I can't remember it exactly, is when people are throwing rocks at you, you know that you're swinging the bat the right way. So my encouragement is, you guys are much younger than me. You're on the right path. And just get yourself, you're doing a great job. They're a bunch of bullies. We tried to work with them. And what I would do is, just a suggestion, I'll get off, confront them. We'll get a kid from journalism school at Columbia, get some guys on board who are journalism majors, and just demand a debate or demand an answer or an editorial review, or go to the other media. But don't get discouraged. You're doing a great job. I think this is wonderful the way you're doing it. You're engaged. That's what the Democrats are not. They're not engaged. So it's great.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. I actually do have a journalism major, though. I'm a volunteer here on WBAI and a volunteer with DSA. DJ or Nomi, any response to that caller? If not, cool, we can go on to the next. Oh, go ahead, DJ.
No, just thank you. That's very kind of you to call in and say that.
I think we have one more caller. Caller, you are next up on WBAI. You're live on the radio.
Hi.
What's your thoughts tonight?
Professor Carter from North New Jersey. A couple things really quickly. One is, we need to get civics back into the public schools, not neoliberal version of civics. I just want to say that. And maybe that's something we have to do community by community. The other thing is that, you know, I'm benefiting from the tail end of FDR's new society. And so when I hear what you guys are saying, it's really a Franklin Delano Roosevelt democracy, and that had social safety nets, and that's what you're looking at. So I think for older people, you might want to remind them that what you're doing is not different from what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did. Not that he was the end-all. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying the fact that as a response to the Great Depression, there were a lot of social safety nets that we're losing, and they're hoping that you guys don't have them. And I'm old enough to still be benefiting from some, like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and some of the other resources you need. I grew up when there were no homeless people, none. So this is all interesting to me that this is even happening. But as we lose the social safety nets drastically now since the 1980s over the last 40 years, and even more so in the last few years, that's a problem. With regard to the police, real quick, one of the things I suggest is that there be efforts, community efforts, probably to force elected officials to explain, not explain, for the public to force elected officials to stop paying for the insurance for police officers. The public is incurring this cost. And so there's a need to educate the public as to how much of their paycheck is going to cover the police when they engage in whatever kind of behavior that is not satisfactory. Because if they're paying their own insurance, and we know insurance companies do not like to pay, and if this cost is shifted to the police, I'm sure that a lot of the problems we have, one, it's a way to defund the police, because we're saying instead of the public picking up the cost, the police, you pick up your own cost of the insurance. So that way when somebody files a lawsuit, you have to pay. Your property, your assets are on the line. So something to consider. And the last thing, this is from a former police detective. I can't remember his name right now. But he has suggested that cities look to file lawsuits against bullet manufacturers, because bullets are not covered by the Second Amendment. Only guns are. So those are my comments and some recommendations.
Thank you so much for calling in. And I'm going to quickly go to the next caller, not because we don't have a lot to respond, but we do have a bunch of callers on the line. So our next caller, if you can try to keep it real brief so we can get to everybody, you are now live on WBAI.
Thank you very much. I would like to praise you for a very open discussion and including callers. I'm on the street every day. I'm riding the subway every day. during COVID also, night and day. And I have absolutely seen a much higher rate of crime. I was mugged by two women in front of my building. I was nearly murdered, and the police and the courts did nothing. I was in, people entered my apartment. They broke in when I was trying to lock my door. They ambushed me, broke in, and I was nearly dead. And the only thing that saved me was adrenaline. I was able to rise up somehow when one of the guys was on top of me beating me, and they knocked me out three times. I mean, there is so much violence now. I hear on the street there was a woman murdered a block away by her lesbian lover. There was all kinds of things going on in Brooklyn, but I disagree about the crime rate, because if you're in a car maybe with a husband helping you every day, maybe you have very designated destinations, that's one thing. But if you're out here struggling, working on the train, there's a lot of violence. I am telling you firsthand, I disagree with that. Now, I know you're just wonderful people trying to make a difference, but for you to say that there's not a rising crime rate is just crazy. I mean, the police had body cams and they saw everything, and the people were held to account, but then the courts dismissed it on the fact that one paper was missing from the police file. One paper, and nothing was heard. No evidence, no case was heard whatsoever. They dismissed it before it began. And I was nearly killed. And I still have so much damage, you know, broken teeth, broken nose. My vision is very impaired from smashing me in the face and knocking me out. I mean, it's a miracle I'm alive. That's all I got to say. But I noticed the difference. I mean, I went to college in New York here, and I'm here, I'm in Europe, I'm all over. But I'm telling you, it's really bad. So I totally disagree with that estimation that it's specious or it's fictitious. Yeah. Or it's a Republican narrative. No, I'm here. I know. Two women mugging me and whatnot, you know, it's, anyway, thank you so much. But I appreciate your narrative. I appreciate your
discussion. Yeah, well, thank you so much for calling in. And I'm so sorry that you're still dealing with the physical trauma and I'm sure the emotional trauma.
Yes.
Yeah, and we, you know, we as I think Nomi said earlier, are not discounting how anyone is, you know, what they're feeling or what they're seeing. What I was mentioning earlier, you know, are actual statistics. And there's no doubt that we are seeing more poverty too. And I think a lot of people interpret that as crime sometimes as well, not to discount at all the actual, you know, physical mm-hmm. violence that you felt. And, you know, we are coming up towards the end of the show. So I'm going to quickly turn it over to you, Nomi, to respond. Mm-hmm. And if you have any things you want people to know that they can get involved, and really quickly, DJ too, after Nomi, and then we got to wrap it up.
Yeah, thanks, Lee. That's really horrible experience, and so sorry that you had to go through that. But yeah, I think people are feeling unsafe. That's a very real thing that's happening. And you know, we really want to get to the root cause of these acts of violence. That's how we find solutions to this. So that's what this project is aiming to do. So, you know, if anybody is interested in joining us to talk to small business owners, we have a Canvas coming up this Saturday, and you can sign up at bit.ly/safetycanvas. We'll hear from small business owners about their experiences with all of this.
Really quickly, DJ, a last word.
Yeah, thanks for having me. But hopefully see more canvassers on Saturday. I'll be there.
Thank you so much, DJ and Nomi, for having this conversation with us and all our listeners. You've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com, and you can find us on our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com, or on Twitter at NYCRPM. Have a great night, New York City. We love you all. Stay safe.
Hi, it's Janine from Brooklyn. I have no complaints on WBAI. I'm very happy with everything.
My name is Anthony. Is it possible to create an app? Would that help build up the base if someone could just put an app on their phone, click on it, and get to BAI, like get to other radio stations?
This is Rose from Flemington, New Jersey. There are a lot of young people.